Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly show that looks at all the latest technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. Great to have you with us. If you want to get in contact with us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written emails, always welcome. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up, Hubert Pavalkovic chats to the team at Waymo as they prepare to launch their autonomous ride-sharing service in London. We'll be hearing about how the AI-powered assistant app ScribeMe works, and we'll have our final part of the look at the Orbit Player. Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran joining me this week. Let's see what's catching your attention this week.
Here's a question for you both. If you're working on your laptop and somebody Teams calls you, what's the quickest way to answer it? Because the two things I find most frustrating about Teams on my laptop are, one, hearing that somebody's calling me, knowing that somebody's calling me, but not being able to find the window in time to accept the call. And two, if somebody requests to take control, if I'm in a meeting and I'm sharing my screen and they request to take control, because Teams does a similar thing where it like opens up three different windows, I think one for the main app, one for the call, and one for the screen share view, trying to track down the accept request to take control button, by the time I found it, it's disappeared.
So I must admit, the Zoom thing was purely a rant because we've all been getting wound up with it this morning. But this one, I actually do have a tip with. So yeah, I found the same thing about not being able to answer calls. I don't know about the take control thing. I've always struggled with that as well. But when a call comes in, if you're on the latest JAWS, or it might have been last year's JAWS that this was introduced in, there's like a call management thing. So when a call comes in, if you do Alt Windows C, this JAWS call thing will pop up, and it doesn't tell you who the call is from, but it gives you a list of like calling apps. I think it's got Teams, Skype, and something else listed in there. I could be wrong. It's definitely got Teams, but Teams should be at the top. And then if you do Alt A, that will answer the call.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's very good.
Yeah, just Alt Windows C, that JAWS Manage Call window should pop up, and then Alt A will answer it with audio.
Yeah, that's a really useful one. If you've got Teams open, which I always have, then you just Alt Tab into Teams, and then just do Control Shift and A if you want to answer the call if it's video, or Control Shift and S if it's just the voice that you want.
See, that's the thing, is I've looked up Teams shortcuts and I don't find them intuitive. You know, there's, I think it's Control Shift A and Control Shift V for an audio call, or Control Shift S and Control Shift V for a video call. It's just, yeah, I find them a bit faffy and I don't find it that useful. I think it likes me to be in a certain position before it will accept it. I feel it's quite particular.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a bit. I think my favourite one is Control Shift and D to decline the call, because I very often am in a meeting and then somebody else might not have seen that I'm on a call, and they just start ringing me, and it's so annoying because you're trying to listen to the speaker in the meeting. So yeah. I just go Control Shift and D, and that one is a useful one to use.
Oh, well, a few, there you go. We went from a rant to a few, like, conferencing tips. There we go. That's all right. Natalie, is anything caught your eye this week?
Yeah, this is actually one for people who are using magnification, or even actually possibly not using any assistive tech at all. And, well, it's two things. One is, it's a resource called My Computer, My Way, which is even more useful than I thought it was when I first came across it. So it's a free tool. It's offered by AbilityNet, who are a non-for-profit organisation. And you can search on there for different ways to make your device easier to use. But you can filter by condition, you can filter by problem. So, for example, it might not be that you filter by visual impairment, but you filter by everything's too small. And you can filter by device. So, actually, I was having a bit of an argument with it this morning. So, I wanted to check something and I was looking at it on my phone and it had auto filtered to my phone as opposed to when I last looked at it, it was on a laptop. So first of all, that's a really useful resource. But the tip that I really liked, and I thought this would be really useful if I used a mouse, and that is you can make the mouse pointer larger in Windows. So you can make it physically bigger. And I think you can also add a trail to it. So it's got a bit of a longer stem on it to be able to see. And again, it's really simple. You just go to Start menu, Settings, Accessibility, and in there there's an option for mouse and touch pointer, and there's a scroll or a slider for mouse size, so you can literally make it bigger. And I think there's also an option in there to, like I say, add a trail to it. And I thought when I was younger, when I was able to see and used a mouse, the number of times I just lost it, and I had no reason whatsoever. Didn't have any difficulties, didn't have any reason for losing it. It's just a case of the mouse can be very small and your window can get very busy very quickly. Or if you just knock the mouse or the trackpad and don't realise and don't know where it's gone spinning off to. I thought those are two, in my opinion, very useful things.
Well, something I saw this week, just when things couldn't get more confusing with JAWS, they have now updated the naming conventions. Which, to be fair, I want to know your guys' thoughts on this because I'm a little bit in two minds. So the pricing model has stayed the same. There's no change to pricing, which is good because I think I've got my head around the pricing now. It's just the names that have changed. So JAWS Professional is now JAWS Work Edition, which is good, makes sense. The Home Annual version, which we don't get in this country, that's a US and Canada thing, which is the kind of lower cost subscription model, I guess. That is called JAWS Personal. So again, pretty good, makes sense so far. The one that I'm not sure about is the JAWS Home Edition, which we do get. And is almost a step up from the Home Annual. That's called Access Edition, and I'm not sure about that one. That it's not the way that I would have done it.
Yeah, they're all supposed to be accessible, so yeah.
Yeah. If it was me, right, personally, I would have gone because the thing with the Home Annual is what I've been struggling with is why the lower price for the same product, especially if you're in the US or Canada. Do you go for home or do you go for home annual? Especially with the subscription thing, what's the difference? It doesn't really apply to us, but for them over there, it must be even more confusing. And now we're starting to see a difference in that some of the AI features that have come in this year, like the graphics labeler and things like that, and the picture smart stuff, they're either, don't quote me on this because I'm not sure which one it is. They're either not available or they're limited. It's like you've only got a certain amount of usage. So it's starting to make a bit of sense now why the lower cost. So I would have gone JAWS Work, JAWS Home, and maybe, I don't know, JAWS Lite or something for the Home Annual.
For me, it's a bit concerning that they're starting to break up what you get in JAWS, for different tiers. I know other software does do that. That if you want to buy, a sort of a premium version of something, you obviously pay more for it. But I think traditionally JAWS has always been, you either get the home license or you get the JAWS Professional. And I don't know, a lot of people are very unhappy from what I've been reading and listening to, that they're very unhappy about this segregation of different parts of JAWS, that you've got to be careful which version you buy or upgrade to, because you're going to lose some of the features that have always been as part of each JAWS upgrade. And I think it is a bit concerning for a lot of people. Well, what does that include? What does that give me? You know, I'm paying an SMA, or I'm paying for a version of JAWS. What am I actually going to get for that now? And it wouldn't be so bad if they were really confident about what you are getting. But a lot of people you ask, they don't know. Maybe that will settle down. But my feeling is that the actual people that are selling it, they don't really know either. So that really compounds the issue for customers.
Yeah, I think my thing with that, from a tech point of view, it makes sense. Like if you're on the JAWS Lite, as I call it, if you're on the lower cost version, because these AI features will be costing Vespero a lot to run. So from the tech point of view, I get it. I get why you would get less of those features if you're on the lower plan. The thing that concerns me is if you're new to all of this. If you're new to blindness, or if you're new to screen readers, or you're new to the sort of thing of, well, what do I need? Will this AI thing, is it any use? Or what is it? What does it give me? That sort of info is not easy to find out at the minute.
See, what they might find actually is if they make it too complicated, people will go to other screen readers. And unlike 20, 30 years ago, where JAWS was the dominant one in the market, NVDA is becoming very, very popular. And in that example, Callum, like you said, if somebody's new to the world of visual impairment, is complicated and scary enough, they might think, I'm not going to spend hundreds of pounds on a piece of software that may or may not be helpful to me. I'm going to just try this free version because everybody says it's great. So why shouldn't I?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think it might cause a few issues with access to work as well, because I think some people do get JAWS upgrades, or maybe they're new to screen readers, so they get JAWS bought for them in employment. But do the access to work assessors even understand? I bet they don't.
I think hopefully in that situation, the default would be to assume you need the work version. But
Yeah. You would
if they
hope.
break it up any further, you're right, that could get confusing.
Yeah, there you go. Some changes to JAWS there. I really hope it does settle down all this confusion over it, because it's still a great product. NVDA is probably just as good, if not better, in some respects. But JAWS is brilliant, and it needs to. Well, it's not going to go away, but they need to really kind of sort all this confusion out. For me, in my opinion, and hopefully they will. Okay, another busy week. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. The autonomous ride-sharing service Waymo will be launching their service in London this year. Hubert caught up with the team there and even got hands-on with the car itself.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we are here at the Waymo event in Covent Garden in London. I'm currently joined by Andrew Lennox, Chief Executive at Guide Dogs. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
It's really great to be here and great to be at this event this evening.
How do you feel about this? Is it about self-driving cars, making their start in their way into London? What's your kind of reflection on it?
My first thought is one of excitement, because it gives opportunity and choice to individuals. So the community we're here to serve and support, that of our of people who are blind, partially sighted, this gives them the opportunity to be able to do things spontaneously, which they would never have been able to do before, be able to live that life that they would choose, which is up to now has not really been possible. But technology is a great enabler. Now, obviously, there are a great number of safeguards we need to make sure are in place, but my first reaction and feeling is one of excitement for the future.
Is this your first time being able to actually, take a look at one of these cars and learn more about them?
In terms of in the flesh, absolutely. I've been following some of the research that's been going on since, 2018, with much interest for many years. And obviously watching some of the programs we see on TV about these vehicles in America. So actually be able to get up close to one, be able to see one, sit in one, and actually see what a great environment it could be for the future. Yeah, it's really great.
Now, you have a bit of a personal link to this as well, that you are watching this for. Are you happy to share a bit about that?
Oh, very happy to. So my own personal journey is one where I got bilateral glaucoma. So in time, I'm going to have to stop driving, and every few years I have to go for that medical. But I look to the future now, and I'm not so bothered about it, because yes, one day I might have to give up driving, but the rate of expansion we've seen of Waymo in the US has been quite phenomenal. So if that is repeated here in the UK, by the time I give up my driving license and get myself to a point where I qualify for a guide dog, then actually technology like this is going to be more prevalent across the UK. And so that fear I might have of being isolated will begin to fall away. And I'm really looking forward to that brighter future with autonomous vehicles.
I can't also help thinking, having a guide dog of my own as well, that actually with these self-driving cars, one of the big issues that could be tackled here kind of as a side bonus is the fact that, you know, we won't have to worry about guide dog refusals as guide dog owners.
And that's a huge thing. So it's great that actually some of this technology is going to make that a thing of the past. But it's also quite sad that even though we have this legislation in place that says you cannot refuse access to a guide dog, that still happens. So the fact it's going to be taking autonomous vehicles to change that is both sad, but at the same time, a relief for those who are guide dog owners who regularly experience that in their day-to-day life.
Fantastic. Andrew Lennox, Chief Executive at Guide Dogs, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect
My
Radio.
Genuine pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Amanda Ventura, and I'm on the public affairs team at Waymo.
So, Amanda, we are here at the Waymo launch event, and you're going to give us a bit of a look at the car, I believe.
Of course. Let's do it. Let's check out Waymo.
All right.
Okay, so the Waymo is an all-electric Jaguar I-Pace. If you reach out your right hand, you can kind of...
There it is. Feels very nice and smooth and shiny. Probably nice and clean for the launch.
It is nice and clean for the launch. That's correct. So our vehicle is baseline, and there's actually someone inside the vehicle. So we'll wait to open the door, but you did notice that the handles kind of feel a little bit distant. It's because they actually stay flush with the sides of the vehicle until you unlock it from your app, and then they pop out so that you can grab the vehicle door handle and open it. So the vehicle itself it's a standard kind of sedan. It has four doors. It still does have its steering wheel in the front seat, if anyone's wondering. What makes it unique, though, is that we have a lot of hardware on the outside. So if you wanted to actually reach up to kind of the top of the vehicle here, you'll start to feel some hardware.
Yes, there's a sensor that there's something that kind of goes across the roof of the car here.
Exactly,
the roof sideways.
And if you go even further, if you can, kind of, there you go.
There's a bigger sensor, there's a bigger bar going across the other way, kind of across the original bar that goes from left to right, from the left to the right of the car. There's one that can be going up and down in a kind of slash motion. So are these sensors then, the bits above the roof, on the roof there?
So the sensors are attached to the roof. And what we have is LiDAR, cameras, and radar. And so kind of the bigger sensor that you were feeling was our radar. And what these sensors do is all three of them work together to give us a 360-degree view around the vehicle up to 300 meters away in full daylight and full darkness. And so this is like a very, very high perception, you know, that we can see completely around us. And it helps us answer four key questions, which is what's around me, what is happening, like what is everyone else doing, and then what do I do next? And of course, the question of where am I, right? And so the technology is taking in real-time information about everyone that's around it, the, you know, people that are walking across the crosswalk or the zebra crossing, you know, the people who are on their bikes, other road users. And it's saying, okay, here's what I think they're going to do, and here's what I'm going to do in response to drive safely through the street.
What stage are we at with the kind of self-driving element of these cars? Do they still require manual intervention, or is it a case that you can just get in it and it will take you where you need to go?
Yeah, so right now Waymo is fully launched to the public in 6 US cities, and we are starting to drive around London. In London right now, we have a specialist behind the wheel, but we're not launched to the public yet. This is kind of still the early stages. So before we launch in a new city, we're doing manual road testing. And then we take the human specialist out from behind the front wheel, and the Waymo driver, so to speak, is doing all of the operations of driving. So what this means is that when we do launch, you hail the car from an app on your phone, and an empty car comes and picks you up and takes you where you want to go. This means you don't need a driver's license to use Waymo. You're always a passenger. You never touch a steering wheel.
I remember watching a documentary about these cars, and it was quite amusing because it was described as if the steering wheel was actually moving on its own as the car was driving, which sounds quite an interesting motion.
Absolutely. So the wheel does still turn inside the vehicle. So a lot of people do kind of describe it as like a ghost driver.
And what can a person do while the journey is ongoing in the car? What sort of functionality can users do inside a Waymo car when they are actually being driven?
Sure. Actually, and let's keep walking so you can feel some of the other sensors too. Sorry, Caesar. So we have a mirror coming up, and then I'm actually going to suggest that you walk a little bit to your left so that we can kind of clear a podium. And then we also have these sensors here. Okay, so this one that you felt that just spun.
Ah.
So that's one of our LiDAR sensors. And this is really kind of similar to some of the sensors that are on top of the vehicle, but they're more for short-range LiDAR and sensing.
It looks like a little kind of light fixture.
It does kind of feel like a light fixture, and it's interesting you say that because LiDAR is light.
Mm.
So it's light detect and ranging. Mm. And what it's doing is it's sending out light pulses to create a 3D view of the world around us. What you're also feeling is kind of a boxy sensor. If you kind of guide your hand around, that's going to be our radar.
Mm.
And then our camera systems as well. So we have several cameras. Altogether, we have more than 29 sensors on this vehicle.
There's a bit here that feels just like a camera lens.
That is a camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be a front-facing camera because right now you're at the hood of the vehicle. So you had asked about the functionality of the vehicle when someone's riding inside the car.
Yes.
So when you're inside the vehicle, you can play your own music. So you can, you know, have your Spotify streaming, whatever your favorite road song is. You can also change the temperature. And of course, I know that you have Caesar, your guide dog, with you. You can move the front passenger seat forward so that Caesar has more space in the footwell in front of you.
I'm already sold.
I know.
That's fantastic. And you're not going to get a guide dog refusal.
And then additionally, we have accessibility features available within our app menu. So when you download the app and you start riding, there is an accessibility menu. And within that, you can toggle on certain functions. And one of my favorites is in-car audio cues. And what that does is it gives the rider additional information about what's happening during the ride. So there's a PA system inside the vehicle that can give riders information. It's also how you would connect with rider support. When you have in-car audio cues turned on, the vehicle will give you details such as waiting for the intersection to clear or stopping for an object in the road. Or if you've been in the car for a while, it might even say proceeding along Main Street. And really useful, I think, for, you know, people who are blind or have low vision.
I was going to say, so throughout the whole process, you are aware of what's going on. You don't kind of feel lost along the journey. Whereas, you know, you've been driven by taxi drivers sometimes. They don't really tell you what's going on. They just kind of do their job. And you're sitting there kind of hoping, I hope we know what we're doing. But in this case, you are constantly updated as to what's going on.
Yeah, I would say that it's a little more casual than a constant update because that would be like an information overload potentially for some people. But yeah, it is. The idea is that we want people to feel comfortable and like there's, you know, they understand that the Waymo's got it.
Are you able to request information about kind of your journey throughout while you're being driven?
Yeah, so you can contact rider support 24/7 and a human rider support agent will come on and, you know, answer questions about your ride if you have them. But right now at the moment, you're not able to, you know, just like prompt it to say like, where am I right now? Not yet, but.
Work in progress. And what stage are we at? Like you said, you're driving them around London. How are the cars coping with a city of London's kind of design, which is a bit different to, you know?
Yeah, so as Waymo comes to London, we're bringing more than 15 years of real world driving experience. And so we believe that, you know, we've set a foundation and are uniquely positioned to start driving in the complicated city that is London.
What sort of design does the car have inside? Do you have kind of nice leather seats or is it?
We do. We have blue leather interior seats inside the vehicle.
Sounds very nice. Well, we look forward to finding out more about this and certainly looking forward to finding out more about these cars as they get trialled in London, and hey, you never know. Maybe getting a ride in them at some stage later in the year. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be our pleasure to give you and Caesar a ride.
Oh, Caesar would love it. He'll take the driver's seat, of course, if you asked him. But you know, give him enough biscuits, he might drive you where you want to be. Well, Amanda, thank you very much for describing the car for us and joining us here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having us.
For our final demo slash review of the Orbit Player, I'm going to take you through how you can access your podcasts on the device, which is something that I've been using it for mainly, and just give you a few of my final thoughts from playing with this for the last few weeks, some of the stuff that I've observed, some of the stuff that's, you know, good about it, some of the things that are maybe not so great. So let's start with the podcasts. I'm going to wake my player up from the sleep mode just by pressing the button on the side.
Home book reader 19.
Now, we've spoken before about the quick navigation that you can do, where each number on the keypad corresponds to the item number in the menu. Now, I know that podcasts is number 5, so I'll just press 5.
Podcasts, list, double tap, the 29th of January 2026, 1700 hours, 12.
And you jumped straight into the list of podcasts that you've added. So there's the first one that I've got there, double tap. And that date that it announced was the date and time that the last episode of that podcast was released. As you could hear, I've got 2 podcasts in there. So if I press the down arrow.
The Fast and the Curious, the 30th of January 2026, 1026, 202.
So that's an F1 podcast that I quite like, Fast and the Curious. And pressing either OK or the right arrow will take you into the episodes list for that podcast. So if I press right arrow on this, we should get the latest episode of Fast and the Curious.
Episodes, list, Lance Stroll interview The Fast and the Curious Gold, the 29th of January 2026, 1630, 1 of 226.
There you go, you can find the episodes there. There's 226 episodes of this one available, so it goes back quite far. Pressing OK on this by default will start it playing and it will stream it. You can change that in the settings. You can have it download it instead. But that's what it does by default. To get out of this and back to your podcast list, you can just press the left arrow.
Podcasts, list, The Fast and the Curious.
So that is the list of added podcasts. If you want to add a podcast to this, which is essentially subscribing to the podcast, you can, from this list here, from this podcast list, you can press the menu button, which is at the top, very top left of the device, the top left of the navigation pad.
Context menu, add podcast from URL.
Now, if you know the direct URL to a podcast feed, you can add it here by typing it in.
Search for podcasts.
Now, this is the way you're probably going to want to do it. Search for podcasts. So if I press OK on this.
Search for podcasts, dialogue, search term, edit, blank.
Now we're in an edit field, and something that Orbit have done here, which I love, instead of using one of those virtual QWERTY keyboards that you've got to arrow through, and you've got like Q to P on one row, and then A to L or semicolon on another row, and so on and so on. And if you enter the wrong character, it's like, oh, right, OK, hang on, which row's the delete button? And okay, how do I get out of this? Which one's the search button? And then you try and find numbers and they're just terrible. I'm sorry, but those keyboards are awful. I don't like it. But because you've got a number pad on here, you've got the standard kind of telephone keypad 1 to 0. What they have done is they've used the good old T9 method of entry. It takes me back to my old Nokia days. If you don't know what this is, if you're younger than me, then first off, I'm jealous. But it's basically where each number has different letters associated with it. So number 2 has the letters A, B, and C. 3 has the letters D, E, F. 4 has G, H, I, etc. And you can type in using this method. So by default, we're on lowercase characters at the minute, so everything we type will be lowercase. The star key will toggle between the different keyboard modes. So if I show you that, we're on lowercase at the minute.
Uppercase.
Uppercase, so they're all uppercase characters.
digits.
Digits, which means the numbers will work just as numbers.
Symbols.
And then symbols, where there's all kinds of different symbols associated to each number. I can't remember what those symbols are, to be honest, but there is a really good table in the user guide which explains those. So I'll go back to lowercase.
Lowercase.
Now, if we wanted to search for RNIB Tech Talk, for example, we can just type that in. Technically, we should do RNIB as capitals, but, you know, we don't need to. So I'm going to type that in using the number pad. And you heard that little click there when the R was entered. So if you're not quite sure where the letters are, as long as you're quick with your typing, you can hear the letter first, and then when you stop for a second, that letter will be entered and you'll hear that click to confirm it. So we've got R, so let's carry on with this.
N, J, I, A, B.
Zero is your space key.
Space, run it. T, D, E, A, B, C, G, H, space, Runib Tech, T, A, J, K, L, J, K.
So we type that in. We can now press OK.
Searching, please wait. Found two podcasts. Results, list, RNIB Tech Talk, RNIB Connect Radio, Technology, 500, not explicit, 1-2. Use the up and down arrows to navigate. Press select to activate the focused item.
And there it is. That's that is ours. So now, if I press OK.
Successfully added podcast RNIB Tech Talk. Results, list, RNIB Tech Talk, RNIB Connect Radio, Technology, 500, not explicit, 1-1. Use the up and down arrows to navigate. Press select to activate the focused item.
Now, what's happened here is it's actually, we're still in the search results, but it's removed the one from this list that we've already added. So that's why it says 1 of 1. There's a duplicate. Clearly, our podcast is duplicated in whichever directory the Orbit player uses. So that can happen sometimes. It's not really Orbit's fault. It just happens sometimes with these directories. They've got more than one entry. It doesn't really matter which one you add, but say there was 10 entries. You would still be on the search results and you'd still have 9 entries minus the one that you've already added. So it filters that one out, which is kind of nice. So now we've added it, I'm going to press the back button to go back to my list of podcasts, and we should see it there.
Podcasts, podcasts, list, double tap, the 29th of January, RNIB Tech Talk, the 27th of January 2026, 1400 hours, 2 of 3.
And there we go, there it is. I've got my podcasts sorted alphabetically, so we can see it there. There's an interesting little quirk that I want to show you with dates. So if we go into Tech Talk and scroll through the episodes.
Episodes, list, 601, Tech Talk 601, Be My Eyes, RNIB Gaming Group, Oakley Meet Avant-Garde, the 27th of January 2026, 1400 hours, 1500.
So let's scroll through these.
600, Tech Talk 600, Zez 2026 Roundup, Nibble Nerds, Blind Square Demo, the 20th of January 2020, 599, Tech Talk 599, Uber, Dotpad X, Orbit Player Demo, the 13th of January 2026, 1400 hours, 3 of 500.
Now you can hear it's reading those dates correctly, but if we go to the next one.
598, Tech Talk 598, looking ahead to 2026, the 1st of June 2026, 1400 hours, 4 of 500.
Now this really threw me at first, because I'm thinking, like, it was jumping, the episodes was right, but the dates was wrong. So you heard the last one was the 13th of January, and then this one was the 1st of June. And I'm kind of thinking, where's that come from? Anyway, it eventually clicked that, because I'm using a British voice, the date is being passed to the text-to-speech as month, day, year. So it's in the American format. Whereas because this is a British voice, it's trying to read it in the UK format, which of course comes out as the 1st of June, which is a bit of a strange one. Obviously, it works for the others because, say, 13th of January, well, obviously 13 isn't a month, so it figures it out there. So if you find that your dates are a bit all over the place and it's confusing you, that's probably why, if you're not using a US voice. And you can change that. So if I were to press OK on any of these episodes, it would start playing. And it brings up the usual playback screen that we've seen before. So you can use your up and down arrows to navigate by the various increments, such as all the different times, playback speed. If the podcast has chapters, that option will appear as well, and you can arrow left and right through the chapters. It's all nice and simple. It's the same interface that applies when you're playing pretty much any media, really. If we left arrow out of this and back to the list of podcasts.
Podcasts, list, RNIB Tech Talk.
Now, I've mentioned the settings and how you can change some of the settings. To get to that, I'm going to press the context menu button at the top left.
Context menu, add podcast from URL. Search for podcasts. Delete podcast. Select all podcasts. Podcast details. Import .opml file. Export .opml file.
So you can import or export OPML files. So if you've already got a list of podcasts that you subscribe to, you don't have to manually go through and edit them and add them to this. You can either import an existing OPML file, or you can export your current subscriptions that are on the player out to a file, which is very nice.
Sort by submenu. Check for new episodes.
If you find that a podcast has some new episodes but they're missing, you can do this check for new episodes and it will manually update them. It does a good job of picking up automatically on new episodes, but if it doesn't, then that option's there.
Settings.
And here we are, settings. So if we go into here.
Settings, dialogue, default storage for downloading episodes, combo box, internal storage. Use the left right arrows to change options.
So if you've got an SD card in this, you can change where downloaded episodes go, either to the internal storage or the SD card.
Default action when activating episode, combo box, stream. Use the left right arrows to change options.
So this is what I was talking about with when you press OK on a podcast episode. Do you want it to stream it? Or the other option in there is download. So if you tend to listen to your podcasts offline, or you've got a bit of a slow connection and streaming sometimes plays up, rather than having to find the episode and go into the menu and find download, you can just press OK and it will download it for you. And then press OK again, it will start playing it from the offline file.
Episode playback, behavior while speaking, combo box, duck audio playback. Use the left right arrows to change options.
When the Orbit player is speaking while an episode is playing, you can control whether you want it to duck the audio or pause the audio or just speak over it at the normal volume.
Date display format, combo box, absolute, MMDDYYYY. Use the left right arrows to change options.
Now this is the date thing that confused me. So at the minute, obviously it's set to MMDDYY. Your other option here is
relative, for example, 2 days ago.
And you can have it as that if you wanted to. So like say, as it says there, 2 days ago or 3 days ago. The only date format option, even though the language is set to English UK, the only date format option is the US option. So if it does bug you having that issue with the dates, you can change it there as well.
OK, button, press select, cancel, button. Press select to activate.
And there we go. That's the settings that we've got available for the podcast app. So again, very nice, very simple, very easy to get your head around. So as I said before in the first part of this review, Orbit did very kindly send me this player to review, but they haven't tried to kind of influence the review in any way. They haven't heard any of these before they've gone out or anything like that. This is purely my own thoughts and opinions. So the things that I like about it are, I mean, first off, the thing that I noticed straight away is that the device is very small, very, very nice, very portable, but without being too cramped. You know, there's plenty of space between the buttons. They're definitely tactile. There's really nice little markings on them. You're in, once you get to grips with the layout, you're in no doubt of which buttons you're pressing. But as I said, it's still very small, very light, very portable, really easily fits into your pocket. The connection options are quite nice with Bluetooth and a headphone jack and USB-C for charging. The interface is nice. You can very easily get to your apps. You can very easily find your books or find your documents. And now that they've added support for BRF files as well, that makes it even more useful. So you can drop a BRF or a BRL file onto there and read it on there as well. So you can't go wrong with the formats that it supports. So overall, what it does do pretty well. There are a few quirks and a few things that I'd like to see improved. So the first thing is when you get this from the factory defaults, it just, you turn it on, you power it on, and it just jumps you straight into the main menu. There's no kind of setup process. There's no thing of, you know, a little tutorial or a pop-up, you know, would you like to connect it to your Wi-Fi network, or and here are the benefits of that and here are the things you can do. There's nothing like that. It just comes up straight at the main menu with all the options there, you know, the book reader, braille reader, internet radio, all that. And it feels a little bit kind of, oh, okay, now what do I do? Which, I mean, I'm fine with that. I'm the sort of person who doesn't really read a manual anyway. I'll quite happily just take something out of the box and have a play with it. But I think for something like this, well, for any product really, you need a bit of a setup process or a little bit of an introduction to it. And there are those tutorials built into the device that I showed you before. There's the user guide and there's the audio tutorials as well. But I would like to see them come up at the start rather than having to kind of search them out. So that's one thing. There's just a couple of little weird things, like that thing with the date. You know, if you're not using a US voice, it can trip itself up a little bit with that on the podcast. And I imagine that may happen in other places as well. Maybe when you're viewing file details, for example, that might happen. I'd like to see, going back to sort of a tutorial thing, there are a few shortcuts that you can do. So for example, to check the battery status, you can press the menu and the record key. So the two very top buttons, top left and top right, that will give you your battery level. So if I do that now, just to give you an example.
Battery level, 100% charging.
That tells you that. And there are other shortcuts throughout the device to, say, check the time, open different settings. Like, for example, I discovered by accident that pressing the menu key and the number 4 on the keypad jumps you straight to the speech settings. But I discovered that by accident while I was trying to find another shortcut. And they are mentioned in the user guide, but very subtly. You know, it says, here's how you use this feature. You can also press this shortcut. It's mentioned, it's not very obvious where these are, and I'd like to see maybe a little table somewhere that just has, you know, the various shortcuts, the various quick actions that you can do. By far the biggest issue at the minute is to do with checking the battery level. So when you first boot up the Orbit Player and you check, if you were to check the battery level straight away, it says battery level calculating. So it takes a couple of minutes to calculate itself and work out the battery level, which is fine, a little bit unusual in a modern device, but you know, it's okay. But what happens is the calibration seems to go way out. So for example, I got, I put this away the other day and the battery level was at 30%. So I shut it down, completely powered it off. And you know, that was that. I left it for a little bit. Came back to it a couple of days later, powered it on, and I just wanted to double check before I used it how the battery was doing. And for a couple of minutes it said calculating, and then it said battery level 100%. Now when I shut it down, I'd used it a fair bit, it was at 30%, a level that kind of made sense. It had been powered off, hadn't been plugged in or anything, and suddenly it's gone up to 100%. Like, that can't be right. That's not physically possible. And, you know, I've had a similar thing where I've had a low battery warning. It's got to like maybe 5%. So I plugged it into charge. And as soon as I plugged it in, it said 100% charging. I mean, I've known fast charging, but I've never known it that fast. obviously, I'm never going to give you a thing of should you buy it or should you not buy it, because that's entirely personal preference. That's not the aim. I wouldn't want to do that. But I would say if you're looking for a low-cost player, you know, something that is a bit of a lower cost compared to some of the other options that are out there, this is a pretty solid choice. But I would just be aware of some of the bugs, especially at the time of recording this battery issue. I do think that is the big one that they need to resolve. But overall, I have been pretty impressed with it, to be honest. I suppose the ultimate question is it something that I would buy? Probably not, only because I'm the sort of person who just doesn't have much use for these players anyway. You know, I'm one of these typical modern people of, oh, why do you want that? Everything's on your smartphone. But if I was traveling a lot more, so I'm not really traveling long distances much at the minute, but in my previous job a couple of years ago, I used to travel to, say, Birmingham quite a lot or London quite a lot. So I was on quite long train journeys. And actually, having something that's just dedicated to listening to your books or your podcasts, in my case, being able to download them, save them offline and listen to them without having to worry about, is this draining my phone's battery and where are the nearest charging ports if I need them and is it going to get me through the rest of the journey if I do this? That sort of thing. I probably would get it, yeah, especially at this price. So there you go. That's a few little demos and a few thoughts on the Orbit Player. Are you considering this? Have you bought them? Have you got another media player or Daisy player that you're using and that you're enjoying? Get in touch. Tell us all about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to talk, well, AI, but what exactly? So, cast your mind back to a few years ago, I'd say some point about mid-2024, where a video was shown where AI was used to provide a live description of an environment for a visually impaired person. And in that particular scenario, I think this person was looking out for a taxi and AI was basically telling him when that taxi approached him and things like that. And we all saw it and we thought, well, this is wonderful. You know, when can we take advantage of this? Well, the answer is pretty much now. So today we are going to look at an app called ScribeMe. The app has been talked about quite a lot over the last few months on various communities, including AppleVis, including Facebook groups such as the AI for the Blind Club and a few others. The developer has been very active at communicating with the community as to what the app is and what it offers. Today, we will take a look at that. So what I'll do is give you a quick look at what sections we've got in the app. But the main feature we will focus on showing you is Live Assist.
Opening ScribeMe. ScribeMe. How to use. Button.
So there are various tabs in this app. And at the top of each of these tabs, you will have a how to use button, which you can enable. And it, once you double tap that, it will show you exactly how to use each tab. It will take you through a detailed explanation as to what this is for. So we've got the Home tab, which features a PDF scanner, which is quite useful considering PDFs are often inaccessible. But what it also features is the ability to scan PowerPoint presentation files. And if you've had any experience with PowerPoint, you know they can be equally quite a pain in terms of accessibility. So it will scan the document, it will split everything up into headings and various things like that in order to make it easier to read. It's worth noting that this app does have a subscription. In a sense that you will have limitations. So, for example, with a PDF,
select please remaining files 1.
It says on the screen here remaining files 1. So there is a limit as to how many files you can scan and how many pages you can scan. There are a few limitations. I will show you what I mean with the subscriptions in a second.
Snap Live Assist. Snap and Scribe. Tab 2 of 5. Button.
You've got Snap and Scribe, which is the next tab. This is basically your usual standard image recognition tool where you can take a picture and you can get a description. You can equally upload a photo as well, and it will describe it for you, and you can ask follow-up questions. And if you've added different people's faces to the Scribe Me app, it will also be able to identify people that you have added in your photos.
Live Assist, tab 3 of 5, button.
You've got Live Assist, which we'll take a look at in a second.
Upgrade. Tab 4 of 5, button.
You've got upgrade. I'll quickly show you what's in there because I think it's quite significant to have that information.
Selected. Upgrade. Tab. Upgrade. Heading. Pick your plan.
So you can pick your plan here.
Monthly currently selected. Button.
So you can either have monthly or yearly. So monthly is £19.99. A yearly plan is £200 a year. I'll show you what you get with the subscription, regardless of whether you choose monthly or yearly. I think the benefits seem the same.
Yeah, Scribe Me Max. £19 and upload 100 files per month.
So you can upload 100 files per month.
Upload larger files. Describe 6 photos at once in Snap and Scribe. Ask unlimited questions about any document or photo. Access Live Assist with no timeouts.
So these are the benefits you will get with the subscription. Exactly what you get with the free version, I haven't used the app enough to figure that out. However, you do have a few limitations there, but I guess it all depends how often you use the app and how useful you find it as to whether you get the subscription. That's kind of on an individual basis, depending on what works for you. But yeah, there's that.
Leave a selected profile, tab 5 of 5, button. Selected profile, tab 5 of 5.
Then you've got your profile. Let me quickly show you what you've got there.
Hubert of people, button.
So if you add people into the app for people recognition, they will be stored here.
File history, button.
File history, so if you scan PDFs, PowerPoints, they will appear here.
Subscriptions, button.
Then there's the subscription section.
Settings, button.
Settings.
Contact us, button.
Contact us and social media links will follow. Let me show you what you've got in settings.
Settings. Enable haptic feedback. Switch button on. Settings. Heading. Enable haptic.
So haptic feedback, which I think is quite handy.
Enable processing sound. Switch button on.
That's also enabled.
Dark mode. Switch button off. Language. Heading. App language. English. Button. Snap and Scribe. Heading. Image description language. English. Button. Live Assist language. English. Button. Live Assist response speed. Fast. Button. Live Assist audio. Heading. Voice number 1, Anna. Voice number 2, so. Voice number 3, Lena. Voice number 4, Leo. But. Voice number 5, Max. Voice number 6, Alex. Voice number 6.
And that's all you've got in settings, pretty much. Voices and things like that. Let's go to what we've been waiting for, and that is Live Assist.
Selected. Live Assist. Experience the world in real time as it happens. Live Assist connects you with AI-powered live descriptions of your surroundings, objects, people, and activities. Whether you're navigating a store, searching for a lost object, or exploring a new place, Live Assist describes the world to you live. Important note, by using Live Assist, you agree not to rely on it in situations that could cause harm.
So you've got the usual disclaimer about not using it if it can cause harm and things like that. Now, before...
Go live...
Before we do this, as I won't be able to talk too much during that part, because it will respond to everything I say, what's important with Live Assist is that you move your device slowly and let the app handle the changes to the environment. Because if you move it too quickly, you might find that the same description is being repeated of the same scene, even though your device is facing completely a different direction. That's what I've found from my experience so far. All that being said, let's try it.
Go. End button.
I see a close-up of smooth, light gray or silver surfaces meeting at an angle.
What can you see now?
I see a cluttered core with a cardboard box labeled Think Center, a black backpack, an orange plastic bag, a monitor, a desk lamp, and other items. There's also a small red toy in the bottom right corner.
What shape is the toy?
In front of you is a cluttered area on the floor with a Think Center box, a black backpack, an orange bag, a monitor, and a lamp. The toy lies in the bottom right corner and is shaped like a small figurine, possibly an elf wearing a red Santa hat. The toy is shaped like a small figurine, predominantly red and white, resembling a festive character or elf.
Your 4 free minutes for today are finished. They will reset in 24 hours from your first use today. subscribe button, end button.
So as you may have heard there, we've had 4 free minutes of Live Assist. A lot of that was involving me moving the phone around and seeing how much it can describe. And it did a fairly accurate job, I think, based on what it has seen. It spotted Caesar the guide dog's toy. Eventually, it gave me a description, and it repeated the description a second time, presumably because I've asked the question and it was responding to the last prompt. As I was about to move the phone onto young Caesar the guide dog under the desk, it has told me that my form 3 minutes have finished. That's a very rough kind of demonstration of a Live Assist feature, but I think the main point of that feature really is the fact that it will describe things to you, and it will do it without prompting. You just point your phone and the app does the rest. And I think for me that is a big shift in, you know, live video AI, where it doesn't rely on prompts as much. You can still prompt it if you want it to tell you something specific rather than a general description. You still have that ability, but what you do have is that kind of instant description thing, which I think is quite important because it's closer to what we were asking for and what we've been talking about. You know, we've been talking about reactive / proactive descriptions where, like I said, you don't ask for prompts. This is it. And it's looking at the potential this also has. Imagine this running on something like the Meta glasses and the amount of possibility that can open. You know, you're walking with your Meta glasses, you've got Scribe Me running and is describing what's in front of you. That can be essential. I think when you're walking, whether you're looking for a specific location or a specific sign, or even you just want to know what's in front of you as you approach it. Again, it's not something that I'd use as a mobility aid, because for obvious reasons, this technology isn't always perfect and you wouldn't want to rely on it constantly. But it could potentially just give you that bit of extra information. But I think we're a while away exactly from that running on the Meta glasses yet. I have been seeing information about that, but I think it's still in testing stages, so there's not much that can be said about it. However, in a snapshot, this is Scribe Me. Have you had experience of this app? If so, what do you think? Do you find it useful? Do you find more needs to be done? What do you think? It's your thoughts we want to hear. I've not used all of these features yet. I've not used the screen sharing feature to try and describe my photos, for example. You have that option. You can share your screen with this app and it should, on paper, describe what it sees on your screen. I've not used it yet. When I get more 3 minutes, I might give that a go as well. But yeah, what do you think? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in and joining us. We'll be back with you next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.